We do have, just to complicate the statistics a bit, we do have in the UK, it's certainly thought that maybe one in four lone parents is faking it, that they are effectively living with somebody, but telling the authorities that they are not, to maximise their benefits. And it's certainly a big incentive not to marry, because once you formalise something, your relationship's on the books. I think the benefit system is certainly a big driver of the rise in cohabitation in the UK. So we have this... now, there has been, you've probably heard of this, there has been a very ambitious... plan in the UK since the Labour government came to power in 97 to eradicate child poverty. It's one of the great dreams, was one of the great dreams of Tony Blair. And the frontline solution to get rid of child poverty was the independent working mother. This was directly it has directly emerged from the ideology of Labour feminists. First of all, the majority in sheer numbers of parents in poverty or children in poverty, the sheer numbers, the majority are in fact in two-parent families and not in lone parent, not with lone parents, although lone parents proportionally have more children or families below the 60% median line for calculating poverty. So this independent working lone mother could hardly move the children in the two-parent families above the poverty line. But children in two-parent families, family poverty in two-parent families was something that was invisible. It still is invisible. These families don't count. When anybody's talking about lone parents, or anybody's talking about child poverty, they always talk about it in the context of lone parenthood. Really, two-parent families who are poor are undeserving. I think there is, this has been the very strong message. Now, it was thought that if you, because lone mothers heavily dependent on welfare and usually out of work for very, very long periods, it was confidently expected if only we subsidise the wages of these women and we give them creches or childcare subsidies, it was expected that 70, maybe even 90% of lone parents living completely on the welfare would eagerly rush into work. They were just being held back by the lack of all that childcare. Well, there's been immense expenditure on subsidising wages and subsidising childcare. And what do we have? We've got about a rise of 5% in the proportion of low mothers working 16 or more hours a week. 5%, yes. And some of those are dropping out anyway. And also you've got more coming in at the other end because there's a continual rise in lone parenthood. Now, the UK's child poverty policy was undertaken partly, and it was certainly bolstered by claims that the way to improve child development and through this solve social problems was money. And every time the subject came up, and still every time the subject comes up, the outcomes for children, the poorer outcomes on the whole for children of lone parents compared to those with two parents was all put down to lone parent poverty or lone parent lack of money. So it was thought to follow, give lone parents more money and the problems with the children will disappear. Now, that the state's become the principal or the sole breadwinner for more and more and more children, never so much has been ever spent, I think, on benefits, on healthcare, on education. Now, with all this provision to eradicate disadvantage, wouldn't we see a tremendous improvement in child outcomes, particularly, of course, for the children of lone parents? Wouldn't we expect it? Well, strangely enough, considering all the claims that have been made, there's not even been an investigation of what's happened with all this money. Is there any monitoring of child outcomes in relation to extra expenditure? No. It's not happened. It's extraordinary. And of course, we do know from other work, particularly of Susan Mayer, that money makes next to no difference to child outcomes once a subsistence threshold has been met. Many of the things that children get in modern societies are provided anyway. You think in terms of education, healthcare, and housing, is provided anyway. Extra money probably will make minimal difference to children's outcomes. Money in itself, I mean, it depends, of course, how the parents spend it, and that's a matter for with the parents. That's something to do with the parents, not to do with the money itself. And in fact, indications are that things aren't terribly well. This year, you probably heard this, there was a UNICEF report comparing the lives and well-being of children and adolescents in the economically advanced nations. Well, the UK came last, and it was brought down particularly by its poor family and peer relationships, the bad behaviour, the risky conduct, the drug taking, the drunkenness, the underage sex, the teen pregnancy rates, the fighting, the bullying, the violence. Scandinavian countries actually did quite well on material measures, but countries like Sweden, again, plunged down when it came to relationship issues. Other countries like Italy, they started quite low on things like material well-being for families and children, but they were moving up to the top when it came to relationships. And in fact, southern European countries with very low rates of family disintegration do quite well on child outcomes. Now, coming in a close second to money as the approved answer to child problems are early intervention strategies. Fully resourced mother work would provide more than income to better children's outcomes. Of course, it's going to create opportunities to give children a developmental boost. During the window of opportunity provided by the first few years of life, the enduring notion has it, a big dose of the right stimulation or attention will have long-term life-transforming effects. Now, early childhood education is usually subsumed into childcare, which is assumed to be better for children than parental or maternal care. And parental or maternal care is thought, well, by definition, it's not educational, is it? Can't do much for children's development. I mean, the parents are just bungling amateurs. They don't know what to do. Children should be in these centres with all these experts, you know? So we've got something called Sure Start. It's the government's flagship package to help disadvantaged children. And it's all manner of, it encompasses actually all manner of assistance in particularly designated deprived areas, including high quality childcare, training to get mothers into work, family support, outreach, whatever it is, outreach or home visiting, help for those with special needs, health advice and so forth. Now, Sure Start and early intervention strategies, I think, are an implicit acknowledgement, of course, that income cannot and will not undo childhood disadvantage. Why have this if it's income? And as one cabinet minister is purported to have said, when we have tried money, it doesn't work. We try early intervention, it does work. Or does it? Unfortunately, the Sure Start programme, for all the billions of pounds spent on it, has resulted in little or no improvement in child outcomes. The children of teen and low mothers, the ones that the program was supposed to help most, have worse social functioning, more behavior problems, lower verbal ability than those in non-sure start areas. And it was assumed that if you had all these special facilities in the deprived areas, there would be an overall beneficial effect in these communities. But the mothers in sure start communities actually rate them lower than mothers in other non-sure start areas. And in fact, sure start communities have been showing a greater rise in burglary, violence and drug offences than other areas. So not much of a plus there. Now, there's another study also done by Durham University, which was came out shortly before I came here, and that again showed when children started school, there was no improvement in children's outcomes. No improvement after billions of pounds have been spent over 6 years on early intervention programs. Now, before anybody embarked on this, didn't anybody look at the American Head Start program? It's been going for 30 years, after all. Dozens, hundreds of projects here. Some of them have been analysed quite comprehensively, others not so much. But what do we know from Head Start? In fact, over all the years it's been there in America, it's achieved relatively little in the long term. There's been some sporadic achievements. More Head Start children, for example, Head Start children in some areas, for example, are less likely to have to repeat a grade than the children who didn't go into the project. But contrary to what we keep hearing, any gains in cognitive ability of the children, any gains in intellectual ability, vanish once they start school. There's been a number of reforms in the US to Head Start to ensure that it's far better focused, to ensure that the money's better spent, to ensure that it's more learning based, and that it's better evaluated. And in fact, in 1998, Congress insisted that funding be conditional upon proper evaluations and proper returns. And Head Start has traditionally been for children over 3, but there was a change to focus on children under 3, again with home visiting, with child centres. In 2002, there was a very vigorous, large-scale random evaluation of this early Sure Start programme. What did it find? Well, participating children had better outcomes by the time they were a few years old. What were the impacts? Well, they're very small, and they amounted, for example, to 1.5 more IQ points than controls. So why these children might be scoring a bit higher than their control peers, they scored, again, well below national norms. And like their Sure Start counterparts in the UK, these early Head Start families were more likely to use a lot more services. The favourable effects were almost entirely concentrated amongst Afro-Americans. Moreover, and the same as happened with Sure Start, and we're now hearing a lot of excuses as to why Sure Start hasn't had all these wondrous effects, because of this, because of that, because it's not been going long enough, because it's, you know, and so on and so on. The early Head Start in the US, same in showing that families where they had more than what they termed 3 demographic risk factors, like teen parent, lone parent, unemployed parent, welfare dependent parent, uneducated, no high school certificate parent, that parents had more than three of these factors, the child outcomes were unfavourable, just as in the UK. The children had more problems. They were adversely affected. And remember, the US program is more professional, has more background behind it than the UK one. What about all those intensive programs we keep hearing about, really intensive stuff, you know, where they focus on the children and you've got the really well-trained early teachers and they visit the homes and they do this and the other. Well, there have been, again, sporadic improvements shown by some of these studies, usually disappear once the child starts school. None of the improvements bring the children anywhere near average for their age group. If they were implemented across the board, the impact on social problems wouldn't be noticeable. And again, there are some, even amongst these highly intensive programs, where they have unfavorable outcomes. They make children with a lot of risk factors worse. So where's our sure start in the UK going now? Well, I tell you where it's going. It's collapsing back just into childcare. It's going to operate through things called children's centres, where all services for young children are going to be concentrated. Particularly, they're going to provide something called wraparound childcare for 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, 48 weeks of the year, from birth till five. And it serves the feminist mantra of affordable, universal, flexible, high-quality childcare. And schools are going to be transformed into extended schools or dawn-to-dusk schools with breakfast, childcare and after-school clubs. Now this is all reminiscent, of course, of East Germany, where children hardly went home. So Sure Start disappears into daycare, and these children's centres are all going to have things called outreach programmes which intervene with parents. So Sure Start becomes daycare, and daycare is extended into a system of surveillance and control of child rearing, which, as Tony Blair declared, is a new frontier for the welfare state. And of course, we don't stop hearing about how more time children spend in non-parental care, particularly of an educational variety, is good for them. It's going to improve their outcomes no end. So we do have, of course, several very big studies now undertaken of childcare as childcare in the UK and in the US. Jay Belsky in particular has been involved in these. They are exceptionally well controlled, very, very well conducted. And the overall, if you can have an overall evaluation of the effect of child care per se, and it's very difficult because what are you talking about, what age, what sort of facility, blah, blah, blah. What happens? The overall verdict is that it makes children at group care. If it does anything for children, it makes them aggressive. I know from my background in criminology that the worst thing for children is other children. Leave children in a peer group, it's disastrous. They contaminate each other. And if you're putting children in group care, it is predictable you're going to get aggressive children. And this is what comes out of these very big childcare studies. And sporadically you get these maybe improvements, intellectual improvements sometimes. And again, these usually peter out as the child gets older. Unfortunately, the aggression doesn't quite do that. It stays around for a long while. And unfortunately, those children who've been in group care are going to go into schools and contaminate other children. So you get this contagion from aggressive behaviour. And so this is, I think, socially extremely worrying that this can happen. It doesn't seem that really childcare has any positive impact, certainly not on social behaviour. If you want preschool to prepare children for school, make the transition into school easier, you can have an educational facility like a nursery school, maybe when the children are three. And then you find that the positive effects, well, you only need to attend for a few sessions a week of a couple of hours at three. Extending those sessions won't help. Make the kid aggressive, that's another matter, but we still tend to have this assumption that the more stimulation, the more you can pack in and the earlier you can pack it in, the better the kid's outcomes. No, it doesn't happen like that. And significantly coming out of some of these big childcare studies is, again, the fact that the most important determinants of positive child outcomes are not whether children go to nursery school, but the extent to which parents engage in constructive activities with the child. That it's relationships within the home over the years of childhood and adolescence which are far more likely to affect development than exposure to any program in babyhood or to other people in the